Welcome into the Pirate Preview. Hard to believe that it's literally now game week. And Bubba, we're so excited to finally have our first game of the season. Hard to believe it'd be the 26th of September, but that's the world we live in, right?
Absolutely fired up that it's game week and to preview the East Carolina UCF matchup with the 13th ranked Knights coming to Dowdy Ficklin Stadium on Saturday, 12 noon kickoff, ABC national broadcast. Welcome in from Knights 24/7, Jason Beatty. Jason, we appreciate you rejoining the program.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It's always been a pleasure when we've talked in the past, and I'm excited for another UCF ECU game.
And before I forget, the co-host here, Kyle Barber. I want to make sure we the ladies' man's on with us too.
What's going on, guys?
Jason, wanted to have you on tonight with a preview. I know that's a big time game. Obviously, anytime you can play a conference mate, first game of the season for the Pirates. Obviously, the Knights' big win against Georgia Tech, so you have that under the belt. But what's the mood as far as having the game on ABC? Because it was supposed to be on ESPN Plus. I love ESPN Plus, but anytime you can have a game on ABC, it'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, when I first shared on social media that the game was going to be on ESPN Plus, I have ESPN Plus with the Disney Plus bundle. I think a lot of fans were like, "Oh, I really have to sign up," And I think there were a lot of fans that maybe, with all these uncertainties and who's going to play and positive tests and COVID and I think a lot of UCF fans waited to sign up for ESPN Plus just in case, kind of like what we saw with games being moved around and maybe the game would be moved to a national broadcast. And then Mike Golic, who's going to be on the call, broke the news himself. I think his wife actually did, and he kind of responded and confirmed that news is going to be on ABC. I think, from a national broadcast game for a game for where there's not a whole lot of college football teams being played. I know the SEC starts this weekend, but the Pac-12 and the Big Ten start later on. It's a great opportunity for not only UCF, but also East Carolina to showcase their program. We talked with Josh Heupel this afternoon, and he said, from a recruiting standpoint, when you're unable to bring on people to your campus right now because of COVID-19 and the dead period being extended through the end of the year, this is an opportunity for recruits across the country to tune in and watch both these teams play. So I think a lot of fans, back-to-back weeks, last week's game against Georgia Tech was on ABC. I looked it up. This is the first time that UCF plays on back-to-back weeks on ABC since 2017. Anytime you can get millions of eyes on your program is a great thing for those for both teams. So it's exciting. I think I was happy to see that the game was moved.
In a doubt.
As far as the Knights are concerned, I know that there's been talk about 10 players opting out. There's obviously looks like the offense looking very good for the Knights. What's the talk as far as the coaching staff? It seems like this year, I think Kyle alluded to it last week that this Knight team could be potentially undefeated.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of reaction to that number 10 of the 10 players opting out. I think that was second or most, or it was up there in terms of across the country comparing other teams and how many teams have had players opt out and things like that. So you hear 10 and think, wow, that's something's going on in down at UCF. But you look at some and you actually dive into it and look at the players who opted out. Six of the 10 were freshmen or incoming freshmen or players that really weren't on the depth chart in terms of the too deep or weren't going to see the field this year. Obviously, they lose Tay Gowan, a defensive back. That was a big blow. He was supposed to be a starter. Kalia Davis likely started on the defensive line at the tackle position, probably the best tackle on the line right there. We've heard a number of players say that about him. And then Darryl Mack Jr., a lot of fans know him a couple of years ago, won a conference championship for UCF, but he wasn't going to be the starting quarterback. Obviously, it's always good to have depth because we know nothing. We just don't know what's going to happen in terms of injuries. So him opting out, hurts your depth at that position. And I think a lot of these opt outs, really hurt the depth in terms of the 10 players opting out. But I think you look at the coaching staff and they brought in Alex Golish earlier in the spring, back in January from Iowa State. You promote your quarterback's coach Joey Hazel after losing Jeff Lebby to Ole Miss. Dylan Gabriel entering his sophomore year, yes, you lose a guy like Gabe Davis and Adrian Killens to the NFL, but you know, you have guys like Marlon Williams and Greg McRae and Otis Anderson, who's just a dual threat in terms of running and catching abilities. Absolutely, this team can go undefeated. You know, and I think last year's team could have gone undefeated besides a few mistakes on the road. You know, we got an early test last week on the road, and they were able to handle the business. The UCF's three losses last year came on the road, and so far so good for the Knights. But yeah, I think there's a lot of confidence for UCF, and I understandably they have really talented players on their team and a good head coach in Josh Heupel.
You guys, I believe last week against Georgia Tech, your defense gave up a lot of yardage, but you believe you forced it, was it five turnovers, Jason?
Six turnovers, yeah, and it was almost more. There was a strip that turned into a touchdown that got called back because it was a forward pass by Jeff Sims. But yeah, they had a lot of turnovers, and you know, I think a little bit early on, Georgia Tech opened the game with a great kick return, and they scored really fast, and you know, a lot of fans were like, wow, they kind of ran over that defense in that first drive right there. And then they, you know, UCF tied it up and came back, and then you see Josh Seliskar, a true freshman from Winter Haven, come in and force the fumble and recover the fumble. And then later on in the second quarter, he had an interception based from a batted pass by Randy Charlton. So I think, you know, this team, and we've seen this a few years ago with UCF's defense, yes, they give up a lot of yards, but they force the turnovers when they need them in critical points of the game. You know, kind of a bend but don't break defense, I guess you could call it. So this team's able to adjust when they need to adjust, and we definitely saw that against Georgia Tech when they were having success. UCF adjusted and was able to force those turnovers, and some of the turnovers came later in the game, but majority of them were important and had a great impact on the game.
Do you know how Heupel handled fall camp? It seems like everybody's handled it a little different during the COVID era, where some coaches are opting not to be as physical, not much good on good. You know, you take the case of Navy where they didn't tackle at all. Yeah. How many scrimmages did you guys have in fall camp? And do you know how much good on good you guys did? Because with your speed on offense, if you guys went good on good a lot, that could get your defense up to par where it makes a lot of sense. They're forcing turnovers early.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of fall camp, what you were going back to with the question about scrimmages, UCF had three scrimmages. Inside the Spectrum Stadium, or now called the Bounce House, this season, they had three scrimmages, and I think they were physical. They played, you know, they were obviously very careful with COVID, and they talked with their team doctors, and they talked with everyone involved and university leadership, and making sure they were allowed to have a certain number of people and meet. And you know, I think Josh Heupel made it very clear from day one, before when we spoke with him when fall camp started officially, it was delayed a couple of weeks for different various things. And UCF obviously lost a game off their schedule to UNC, and then later on against FIU. So there was a delayed start in fall camp, about 2 weeks, but they were able to still get three scrimmages in. And we've heard it time and time again, you know, even the last couple of years in terms of the UCF fast offense, they say they practice at game speed. You know, so if this defense can stop that offense or even have even a little bit of success, you know, they're going to be playing against slower offenses just because we know how, you know, how dangerous UCF's offense can get at times and just how quickly they can go down the field. I mean, we saw, you know, they went down 60 or 70 yards in under a minute against Georgia Tech once. Really? So they're going to be practicing against that. And if they're going to be practicing that, and getting that good on good, they're, you know, they know speed, so tempo is not a problem for that defense.
Well, it makes a lot of sense in terms of forcing turnovers, especially because if you see that in three scrimmages, you know, and maybe other teams haven't scrimmaged as much, and that defense is seeing that speed, then the game, you know, Georgia Tech's offense doesn't go as fast as UCF's. So particularly with turnovers, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Navy game, they look at it as, you know, it's give or take, you know, the advantages for both squads. Georgia Tech had played a game a week before, UCF hadn't. When everyone kind of watched what happened with Navy, and a lot of UCF fans were in my mentions on Twitter saying, wait, are we practicing tackling? And they have been practicing tackling and doing scrimmages, and, you know, that was before the first game, obviously. But after that Navy game, we talked with the co-offensive coordinator, Alex Golish, who I mentioned before. And he said, you know, I watched that Navy game and I started to worry about the little things. You know, they're not too worried about the physicalness and the speed and what they practice at. But, you know, they wanted to make sure hey, everything they did wrong, we have to make sure we're doing on correct. So, you know, they were able to get a full fall, a regularly, you know, not your normal fall camp, but as close to normal as possible.
By the way, we have, for the EC perspective, Kevin Monroe, the color analyst. We'll have him on in just a few minutes. He's in the green room, so to speak, guys. So, Kevin will be with you in just a few minutes. One of the greatest D-backs we've ever had in program history, and does a great job for many years now on the broadcast with the voice of the Pirates, Jeff Charles. So, look forward to that. Jason, I'm curious, as far as UCF is concerned, how big of a factor is not having fans in the stands? As far as I know, it'll be the second road game when you come into Dowdy-Picklin on Saturday. But how big of a difference does that make? Have you heard the players, the coaches talk about it's got to be hard for any team?
Yeah, you know, they're going to say whatever they're going to say. Obviously, it's, you know, they're going to give themselves energy and be their own. You know, we've talked to multiple players and they've said when the offense is out there, the defense is going to be the fans and vice versa. You know, a quote that Josh Heupel recently said, if you're juiceless, you're useless. So they know they have to create their own energy and come out and come out quick. You know, I think in terms of playing without fans, obviously, you know, there were some fans in the stands at Georgia Tech. So they do have an idea of what that might sound like with limited fans. I know there's going to be a lot less at East Carolina in terms of the numbers. So there were 11,000 people at Georgia Tech last weekend, but you know, they practice without fans, and I don't think they are too worried about that. And I mean, maybe we've seen some NFL games actually with the hard count and that being more difficult with no fans, just because they're the only ones talking in the stadium. But I think they understand the challenge of playing without fans and the importance of, you know, creating your energy and being energetic and cheering on your teammates and really being the fans for everyone on your team.
Jason, what can you tell us about Nixon? I know he left the game with an injury. So can you provide an update there?
Yeah, he scored two touchdowns in the first half. On that second touchdown, he came hard. It looked like either his shoulder or his collarbone is what I've heard. You know, there's been no official confirmation by Josh Heupel. We asked him for an update on Monday. He said there would be one later in the week. It's later in the week, and he hasn't provided official updates. You know, what I've heard is, if I had to bet, and I'm not a betting man, but if I were to, I would say he probably does not play, just based on what I've heard. You know, even if it is a broken collarbone, or and I don't want to speculate, and I don't know exactly what it is, but you know, when you go down hard like that, that hurts obviously a lot, even if it is the slight fracture. You know, so we haven't got an official update, but it'll be interesting to see whether or not he warms up, or even if he travels to East Carolina. You know, and in terms of replacing Trey Nixon, when they do go four wide, there's a sophomore from Texas named Ryan O'Keefe. He got a little action against Georgia Tech. You know, but outside of Trey, they got Marlon Williams and Jacob Harris and an Oklahoma transfer who caught six passes for over 100 yards last week, Jalen Robinson. So, you know, even though they're going to be possibly without Trey Nixon, there's still plenty of weapons on the wide receiver front.
Jason Howard, obviously one more COVID test to go tomorrow morning before you guys get on the plane. How are you guys with your COVID numbers right now? Any positives that you know of?
Not that I know of. You know, Josh shared last on Monday that they got in and they received the results against Georgia Tech Saturday morning before the game, and they had no positive tests entering that game. And, you know, I think all the players hold each other accountable, and they're wearing masks and taking this seriously, because they know if they don't, they're not going to play. We haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything this week. We didn't ask Josh about it, you know, but they have one more test before the game. But I think, you know, even going back to fall camp, they had some positives right when it first started, but the majority were from, you know, the kids coming from home and maybe back at home, they weren't taking it as seriously, or you know, maybe they were being a little bit more easy about it. And then once they got back on campus and everyone was tested, and once, you know, they were reinforced by their coaches, and they've kind of created a little bubble sort of a little bit in terms of, you know, they're only around each other and they live around each other. So we haven't heard. It looks like they've done a good job handling the pandemic for sure.
Yeah, I know, Bubba, we had a question from a former tight end and obviously ESPN analyst, Jay Sunhalter. Yeah. What do you think about the keys for the ball game will be for ECU UCF?
Yeah, I think, you know, we spoke with Josh this morning, and he just said they want to come out fast and kind of punch ECU in the face. And that's kind of what we saw against Georgia Tech once they adjusted. You know, I think another key to the game is being able to have success with the run ball, with the run game, with Trey Nixon possibly missing the game. They had a little bit of trouble getting started with the running attack last week against Georgia Tech. I thought Georgia Tech did a pretty good job of slowing them down, even though Greg McRae, Otis, and Bentavious Thompson all scored a touchdown. Definitely not the number of yards that they usually would have gotten. I mean, Dylan Gabriel passed for over 400 yards last week. So I think if you're Josh Heupel, it's great to see, you know, Dylan pass for four touchdowns and over 400 yards, but you probably want to see him pass a little less and maybe get, you know, Otis and Greg McRae and Bentavious Thompson a little bit more involved in terms of the run game. You know, I think another thing is if UCF jumps out to this 21-0 lead or 21-7 or whatever multiple touchdown lead at halftime, I think they have to remember to play a full game. You look at last year's game between these two teams and ECU outscored them 22-6 in the second half. And, you know, they made it interesting to say the least and show they weren't just going to get smacked and give up at halftime or anything like that. So I think that's another key to the game. And turnovers, that's the biggest thing. You know, like I mentioned before, three losses last season on the road, and all of them had turnovers. That's where Dylan Gabriel's 7 interceptions came. So if he's able to, you know, talk about ball security and making the right decisions, and maybe that was a little bit because he was a freshman last season, but just not turning the ball over and forcing turnovers yourself is a huge key to the game for UCF.
Who's your backup quarterback? Gabriel, obviously, starter. Who's your backup?
Yeah, with Daryl Mack, I mentioned before, he opted out. Quadri Jones is the true number two quarterback. A couple of years ago when UCF played against ECU, Quadri came in for a play, lined up as a wide receiver, and threw his touchdown pass to Adrian Killens. I think it was like 49 yards, and everyone was like, that kid can throw. And we've heard rave reviews about Quadri Jones in fall camp, and they really like him. He's a local kid from Orlando. Behind Quadri is a freshman quarterback, true freshman, Parker Navarro. He was an early enrollee, so he does have an understanding of the playbook. He's a true freshman from Arizona. So those are the three guys they got, really. And then obviously, you know, I know you didn't ask about Mackenzie Milton, but I'll bring him up. He's recovering well. He's, believe it or not, probably a few weeks away from potentially seeing the field. We've heard extremely, extremely positive things about him and his status. I don't think he's going to be available this week, but I really believe he's going to play this season, which is incredible to say.
Obviously, everybody's granted another year of eligibility. Do you think McKenzie would come back next year?
That is the question every UCF fan probably asks me every day. I think it really depends on why he doesn't play. You know, in terms of the physical recovery, I think he's almost able to do everything he wants to be able to do. I think from here on out, it's mental. You know, does he trust his leg and does he have the ability to run, or is he going to have to change how he plays as the quarterback? And if he isn't able to play because of the mental, maybe he doesn't come back. Maybe he just accepts, okay, I'm probably done playing football, and I'm going to go coach. Because he said time and time again, he wants to get into coaching, and he's actually helping as a player coach right now and, you know, having some sort of role and being around the team and helping Dylan. They're obviously both from the same hometown in Hawaii and played high school ball together. You know, but I think if he's at full health and full mental capacity and believes in himself, and obviously he does believe in himself, but if he's able to go out there and make the plays he's used to, and Dylan Gabriel beats him out in terms of that quarterback battle, that would be an epic quarterback battle. You know, but if it really depends why he's not able to play, I don't think he would come back for another season because realistically, Dylan Gabriel would be a junior. You know, and with his NFL draft aspirations, he's going to have a big junior season, you know, next year, regardless of what happens with Mackenzie Milton. So it really depends. I mean, maybe you could see him graduate transfer, but he has family that have moved to Orlando from Hawaii. So it's, I hope he plays this season. I'll say that.
All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting game, no doubt. Bubba, no, before we let you go, Jason, can you give folks, I know you're on 24/7 CBS Sports. Can you give folks your information and all recruiting and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Follow along, Knights247.com, @TheRealBD on Twitter. feel free to follow along. I'm not traveling to this game, but I will be watching on TV, and you know, we'll be have plenty of coverage at Knights247.com. So be sure to check it out.
Hey, Jason, very quickly before we let you go, I have a question from one of our loyal viewers and listeners, Johnny Gardner. He says, obviously the football game's the focus, but would you guys talk a little about Johnny Dawkins and how Coach Dawkins' squad is looking as we approach preseason practice?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we haven't talked with Johnny in a little bit. They added a few major transfers and have a few talented freshmen coming in. The name's escaping my mind right now, but there was a former five-star kid from COCO that played at Oregon, and now because of the COVID-19 pandemic, he wanted to come back closer to home. The name's – I want to say Isaac Walker, but that name's escaping my mind right now. I was mostly focused on football, but, you know, I think UCF is the middle of the pack team this year. A lot of potential, a dangerous team. If that transfer from Oregon, who I can't think of his name, is if he's able to play. They have a true freshman coming in. He was Mr. Florida, one of the state's best basketball players coming in. As a true freshman, he'll be able to play this year. So I think this team is young, but I think it has a couple guys in the squad that's able to come in and, you know, potentially make a run and see what happens. So I think they're a solid team. You know, I don't think they're, if you know, you think of the top teams in the AAC, they're probably in that fourth or fifth, sixth spot with the potential to be special.
All right,
Jason, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, anytime. Jason Beattie for the Knights 24/7. Great stuff. And here's an old friend. Appreciate him coming back on. Obviously, I want to try to see if I can get this right. It's the IMG Learfield College and Pirate Sports Network. I was trying to get that right. Help me
out, Kevin. How you guys doing? That was close enough. You know it better than I do, probably.
There you go, Dave. There you go.
You got it? Kevin, thanks for coming on tonight. Obviously, big game on Saturday. ABC, huge deal. Mike Golick, I mean, this has got a great atmosphere. Unfortunately, we don't have all the fans we'd like to have, but 350 fans with the parents in there. Out of the gate, how are you feeling before a big game on Saturday?
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to get a chance to broadcast some Pirate football. I'm excited to see Holton Ayler's back there at quarterback again and see this new defense under Coach Blake Harrell run out there. But listen, I mean, this is a game that obviously the Pirates are going in as huge underdogs. And so the expectation is to go in and play well, hang in there, and try to steal one late. You know, so we'll see how it goes. But we all saw UCF play against Georgia Tech last week. We know how good they are. We've seen them the last few years beating up on people. So the expectations are there to play well, but we know it'll be a tough contest.
Kevin, we got a really young defense, brand new defensive coordinator, brand new scheme. Baptism under fire, man. UCF goes 100 miles an hour, and they're extremely talented. How hard do you think it's going to be for this defense to adjust to the speed UCF plays at?
Well, I think it'll be very hard. I'll be honest with you. I mean, you have very little preseason, and your fall camp is cut a little bit short because of COVID. And this is just – it's not something that you can prepare for. You'll hear Coach Houston say, hey, we practiced against the scout team and our second team, and we've, you know, we turned up the tempo, but it's just not the same. It's like trying to have your backup quarterback back emulate how fast Michael Vick is. You know, you just you don't know what it's like until you're out there. And so they're going to be winded, especially if UCF gets the ball first. It could be a really, really fast first series. And so it's you get yourself so hyped up for a ball game, and then you get out there and you can't breathe. And you add to that, they're snapping the ball about every 10 seconds. It's just it hits you so quickly. But as the game goes along, you settle in, you settle down. You just hope that you're not down 2-3 touchdowns when that happens. They've got a pretty good secondary. They're young. I love Jaquan McMillan at corner. I like Malik Fleming at corner. I think both those guys will step up and play well. You know, Tank Robinson comes back at safety. A new guy, Sean Dorso, at safety. And so we'll see. We'll see how they hold up in the back end. But I like the athleticism. I like the ability to move around. You got some guys returning on defense at linebacker that we're used to seeing. You guys like Xavier Smith and Bruce Bivens. Those guys are players. But are they up to the task of this offense? That's yet to be seen. But I'd like to see what they can do tomorrow because I think they're athletic enough to make plays. They just got to do it.
Kevin, you referenced Sean Dorsey, a guy who actually began his career at Fresno State. When I watched his junior college film, he reminded me a lot of Damon Magazoo in terms of his ball skills and just having a knack for making plays.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of good things. I've not got a chance to see him play yet, but you know, with his athleticism, his size, I think he can do something. And so anytime you get a guy like that back there, also with the experience of Tank Robinson, I think you got something nice. And then Warren Saba has been a guy that's played nickel corner. He's played some safety. He's at the other safety spot. So I think they've got enough experience back there and with the new transfer to make some plays. So I'm excited to see him back there.
What do you think about all the youth on the defensive line, Kevin? We got numbers. Well, we got more players to play with on the D-line now. But they're all young.
That's scary. And any coach will tell you, you build a team from the line out, right? So you got to get stud defensive linemen, stud offensive linemen, and then you fill in from there. It's great to have a great quarterback and good running back and receivers and DBs, but if you don't have the line on offense and defense, you nothing happens. And so to see so many guys leave last year and have to bring in some of these transfers and some of these young guys have to step up and play, there are a few names that we've seen before in the program, Haji Baji and guys like that, but there's a lot of new guys, and it does make me nervous. But some good size, you know, a couple guys, 6'3", 6'4", that can move around, get in the quarterback's face and maybe knock down some passes. But it's going to be a learning curve. Absolutely, these first few games with a bunch of young defensive linemen, that's not what you want going into a new season.
And Kevin, one of the things I've mentioned was the fact that with even though we have a new defensive coordinator, we've seen in the past where you have guys that – simplify the defense. It seems like that Blake Harrell's come in and the guys are really buying into what his system is and what I've heard. And obviously we're not at practice, but like we normally are, but it seems like they're buying into it. And obviously they're having fun out there. And I don't know, but it seems like every time we've had a defensive coordinator that's not trying to be too fancy, that we've had success going all the way back to with the likes of HUD and obviously with Rick Smith coming in at 23-13, for example. But what are your thoughts on Blake Harrell?
You know, I hear a lot of good things. And to be honest with you, the simpler, the better. Because what you don't want is for your defensive guys to be thinking too much, right? If you're thinking too much, you're not playing ball. I train young kids on offense and defense, and I'm always telling them when they're running a route, I can tell if you're thinking. Just go run the route and make the break. And so when I want guys chasing the football or lining up on a receiver and just covering him or being in your zone and make sure you stay in that zone, or if I've got a blitz to do, just doing that blitz without having to think so much about all the different checks, it makes it a lot easier. You can play a lot freer that way. So if he's simplifying it like I'm hearing he's doing, I think that's a good thing, especially what Kyle's talking about with the young defensive line. You don't want to have too many stunts and tricks when those guys start thinking too much and can't make plays. So I hear good things. I watch him in his past career at other places. The defenses have played well, and so I'm hoping for good things on Saturday.
Kevin, on the other side of the ball, there is some experience, obviously, with Holton back at quarterback. You got a good core of receivers with C.J. Johnson and Snead and some of the other guys. One thing last year we struggled at time was running the ball. There appears to be some talent in the running back room with Penix back healthy, and then you got the transfer from Arkansas and some of these other kids. If the O-line, you got to believe Shank has figured out a way to put a competitive offensive line on the field.
Coach Shank was the offensive line coach when I was there, so he goes way back. I mean, he's a heck of a coach, and so you know he'll have it together. If he's got the bodies to do it, you know he'll figure it out. I love the left side of the line with Deontay Smith, Sean Bailey probably. So I feel like that's the side they're going to favor when they run the football. Derek Penix he's a big guy. He's a big, bumbling back. He's not going to be a guy that's going to hit the hole quick. You know, he's a guy that maybe help you run through the hole and push people out of the way. And so you may have to open up a bigger hole for him, or you may have to get him around the edge or find ways in a zone blocking scheme to find him a little bit of a hole. But some of these other guys behind him, Chris Hayden and Rajah Harris, I'm hearing good things. So I'm hoping that, we can get a run game going. I've said it a number of times. In this preseason that, we really haven't had much of a running game since Ventavious Cooper. And so I'd love to get a 1,000-yard back there that can make something happen, because Holden's a heck of a quarterback and you hate for him to be your leading rusher every game, right? So you'd like to have somebody step up and pick up that role so he can sit back and throw the football.
And Kevin, another thing that comes to mind is obviously being the quarterback, being such a important position on the field. You bring up a great point. The last thing you want is Holton to get hurt. I know that we have a depth at quarterback, probably the best we've had in a long time, but still with that athleticism he has and all the dynamic threat that he has for brings to the table, the last thing you want him is to go down, and he's the leader of the team.
That's right. In short yard situations, you know, I'd love for him to get back there in that option situation and maybe get a first down or something like that. But the fewer times he carries the ball, probably the better, unless it's a scramble situation, because you don't want him getting banged up. And the difference is he's a big boy, right? You know, he's 230 pounds on a light day. So you expect him to not really get hurt, but you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, you look at a guy like Saquon Barkley, nobody's got better legs than him, and he blows an ACL. So you just never know what can happen. And so you hope that you get the ball fewer times to Holton, you let him throw the football. I think the thing that made him better towards from the middle to the end of the season last year was he stopped trying to do too much, right? He stopped trying to fit the ball in small windows. He stopped, you know, just taking off and running when he had a little bit of pressure. He found out a way to stretch the play out, find an open guy, and throw to an open guy. And the thing I love about Tyler Snead and Blake Proehl is they're great route runners. They know how to work the scramble drill, and they know how to get open when he's in trouble. And then you have a guy like Johnson that can stretch the field like nobody's business, and he'll go up and catch the football in traffic. So the receiving position, I think, is you know, it's always good at East Carolina, but this will be a great year, I think, if they can just find a way to get those guys blocked up and let Holton do his thing.
Kevin, one of the things that we had our previous guests, obviously supporting UCF, given the UCF perspective, talking about Heupel, obviously wanted to come out and punch East Carolina in the mouth. But that was what I was saying, getting ready for tonight, preparing, thinking about what I would say to you guys tonight. I think East Carolina's got to punch UCF in the mouth early on and kind of startle them, because if we let them dictate what they want to do, it'll be a long day in what we've seen the last few seasons. But I really think that we have a huge opportunity. What a great way to get a great big upset on ABC home. The only thing missing will be the 51,000 screaming Pirate fans going nuts.
Yeah, there's no doubt you want to keep Dillon Gabriel and that offense off the field at all costs. If you win the toss, take the football. You want to try to establish a run game. I guess we'll get into my keys a little bit later, but the one thing you want to do is make sure your offense is on the field and UCF's is not. So if you say keep the ball, have long drives, score the football, score touchdowns, not field goals, but definitely if you can get on them early, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking, go ahead, Bubba.
We talk about big playability, and when we talked about the running back position, a guy who's made some explosive plays in fall camp is Keaton Mitchell, and true freshman out of Georgia. He had a 95-yard touchdown run, another that was about 50 or 60. And then you also have a guy, a UCLA transfer, who was in the program last year. We saw a thing or two from him, but nothing with any type of consistency, but he's had a tremendous offseason. Audio Matosho, really look forward to seeing him stretch the field.
Yeah, I said his name so well. Omosho, I think, is about right. And I think, yeah, he caught a deep ball in one of the earlier games in the season for a touchdown and kind of showed us what he could do. But it seemed like he struggled to kind of find his way in that offense, and I'm hoping – especially working alongside CJ and watching the way he does things, that will bloom this season, because he looked like he could be a good player. And Keaton Mitchell, I mean, you know, at 5'9", 181, he's kind of a scat back, but you mentioned his quick feet and his speed and be able to take one to the house after hitting a hole, unlike what Darius Penix can do at 6', 225. You like to have those scat backs, kind of a thunder lightning approach. So I expect him to get some opportunities at some point. As you guys said, this is kind of a free season, right? So even if you play, you get that year back next year. So I don't think the concern about, you know, blowing red shirts or anything is an issue this year. You want to make sure you get guys out there and get them some reps.
Speaking of a free season, Kevin, just a off the wall comment here. Bob and
not
I
from UCal.
Do what?
Not from UCal. Never off the wall stuff. Never.
Well, this is actually football related, though, Dave.
Oh, okay.
But, the NCAA. Is actually set to approve next month for a one-year I don't know how to say this correctly. Basically, you can go to a bowl game no matter what your record is this year if it's approved by the NCAA in October, speaking of this year kind of being a throwaway year. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. You can see the Pirates in a bowl game potentially with three or four wins.
That is interesting. And honestly, I didn't even know until you said it that there would even be a postseason this year, because you just never know how many games you're going to play, right? Like Notre Dame's not playing on Saturday because of COVID, and it could happen to any team at any time. So it would make sense that you don't put a regulation on how many wins, because people are going to be playing a different number of games. So that would be something to think about, and especially because if you have a situation where it's a bowl game, what state is it in? You know, is that state allowing fans? You know, you don't want to, you know, go to a bowl game and nobody can be there to see it. So who knows? Who knows if that's a way to make money for the program or a way to lose money for the program, whether you take a bowl bid or not.
And Kevin, yes, you know, with the very fact that guys with high school football, how many times have we seen in North Carolina high school football? So glad to see that finally in February. It's going to be, it's a long time. Feels weird not to have high school football right now. But anyway, how many times have we seen the North Carolina High School Athletic Association, the playoffs, where teams have in the first round 2 wins, 3 wins, but they have to do that, especially in our neck of the woods in 1A ball, because if you don't, there's not enough teams to play in the playoffs.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and sometimes those guys make noise, right? They get in the playoffs and they find a way to win, and you're thinking you're not even supposed to be here with your 2 wins in the regular season, but they make some noise. That happens all the time.
And Kevin, that's what you think back to our day. That's why I graduated in 2000 from North Davidson, and then you were, I know, mid-90s from Rose. Back in those years, I remember one year my conference, well, we had Ragsdale and High Point Andrews. All three of us finished 9-1. So we were all sweating it out for drawing straws. There was a team, I'm trying to remember, I want to say it was High Point Andrews, stayed home with a 9-1 record.
Yeah, it makes you sick to your stomach, right? Because you just think that they should take the best teams regardless of what conference they're coming out of, but it just doesn't work out that way. It seems, you know, in the NFL, it's kind of the same thing, right? You got the Cowboys and the Redskins and the Eagles and the Giants, and the Eagles and Giants or the Redskins and Giants have been terrible, and the Eagles and Cowboys are fighting it out, but you have three or four teams in there with 8 wins, and one of them squeaks out a playoff berth. It's just weird. So it's just having, and you go over to the NFC South, and there's three teams over there with 10 wins, and only two of them get in, or one of them gets in. So it's sometimes it's unfair, but I guess that's the way they have to do it.
Kevin, before we get your keys to the game, talk about how many years is this with you calling games for East Carolina, and talk about your relationship with Jeff Charles, the voice.
Yeah, I think my first fall was the fall of 2003. So counting back, I think this makes it my 18th season. I'm only 43 years old. I feel like I've been doing it forever. But this is season number 18, and Jeff is in the upper 20s. I don't think he's quite the 30 yet, but I've been with him for a long time. And so, you know, early on, it was just kind of like I was in awe of him. He's just so great. My goal every game was just not to step on his toes, not to talk over him. But as we got to go into that first season, we started to get a rhythm. He started to realize when I needed to speak, and I knew when to shut up. And so every year it's just gotten better and better. And, you know, he knows when he can count on me, and I know that he can fill time like nobody's business. You know, hopefully we won't have to fill time in the fourth quarter tomorrow. But, yeah, it's just been great, you know, working with Jeff. Really a dream come true. I wouldn't want to be a play-by-play guy. It's hard. It's a lot of research and a lot of stuff. I love just talking about what I see on the field, and I think I'm pretty good at that, and he's great at what he does.
I believe. And how about Jeff's 32nd year?
Oh, wow.
33rd, but who's counting? Yeah, so it's somewhere in that neighborhood, Kyle. You're right.
I believe it was 88.
Yeah, that's correct.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, and Kevin, as far as two other guys I think I love a lot of, Marty Fuhrer. I always talk about Marty. I tell you what, if there's anybody that knows the rule book, I think Marty knows the rule book better than the people that made the rule book. I really do. He is amazing. I love listening. What I do with you guys, if it's a televised game, what I'm going to do on Saturday is I'll have the big screen on, but I have it turned down, and I have you guys on because I don't want to hear people. I mean, they can say you're a homer. They can say, well, I'm like, well, that's my school. That's who I'm pulling for. I want to hear the guys that I know and know of. I'd rather hear them talk about the Pirates than people that say Eastern Carolina and all that mess. So, but Marty is tremendous on the sideline.
With the delay, sometimes it gets tough to do that. I know, watch it on satellite or whatever and listen to us, but I appreciate you doing that. And Marty's a great guy. I mean, he's been there from day one since I have been there longer than me. He knows his stuff. We love going down there on the sideline, especially if there's some sort of rule to break down. He's always right on top of it.
And how about
I remember Marty on the sideline, guys, when he was trying to get a hold of Coach Logan.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Yeah, you probably didn't know that, Kevin, because you were playing during those years. But right. Coach Logan did not want to talk. It was amazing. Poor Marty is like, Jeff would send it down to Marty, and poor Marty, I mean, he was doing sprint. He could probably do sprints with you guys. He was running so fast to try to keep up with Logan. But I'll never forget that. And another guy that I think the world of a really close friend, David Horn, the guy's got golden pipes. The guy's like MacGyver, guys. I don't know if you got Bubba and Kyle. You know that. The guy can take a piece of gum and he can take a paperclip and he can get you on the air better than, I mean, I love doing on the air stuff, but I'm not a technical guy. And the guy just blows me away. He's not paying me to say that. And he gets very embarrassed when I brag about him, but he is tremendous.
Listen, I was on the air with Jeff and Marty for, I think, 3 or 4 years, maybe 4 or 5 years before David came on. We had a different engineer and I was on the sideline. I did the sideline my first 3 years. And there'd be games where I couldn't hear them at all. And they could, you know, they could hear me, but I couldn't hear them. And so literally Jeff would have like a construction paper that was a bright color and he would wave it out of the window when it was time for me to talk. And I just would talk. And I thought that's just how it would happen. You know, sometimes you couldn't get a good signal. That's never happened since David's been. It's all about knowing what you're supposed to do. And the other guy did not know what he's supposed to be doing.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's impressive that you could see. I know that like you see that bright color, but because I know you're thinking about the game and you're down there and you got the energy of being a former player. I wonder
if anybody ever noticed that and thought, why the hell is Jeff Charles waving bright construction paper out the window?
It's almost Kevin, like a victory towel.
Kevin, one more thing for me before we get your keys to your game. The keys to the game, I don't know if the guys got anything else, but. Just thinking back, listening to you call games over the years, two calls of yours stick out in my mind. One is probably you've heard people repeat it many times, the block at Virginia Tech. No flags on the field, Jeff! No flags on the field! And another one was when we kicked the field goal against UNC in 07. And yeah. You had a very interesting reaction, and you said, holy guacamole. Oh.
I can't believe you remember that actually, but so yeah. So the no flags on the field that follows me. Everybody brings it up to me all the time, and that just you know is spontaneous because I'm always looking for something bad to happen to take it away from it. So that's where that came from. And then the holy guacamole. It's funny you say that. So the CEO at my company at CapTrust, Fielding Miller, huge pirate. You know he gave $5 million to start the middle school of entrepreneurship and the business school, and so. He came to my office, and this was earlier in my career, and he came to my office and he said, how do I get you to say something on the air? And I was like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, I want you to say something just really strange, just so only you and I know what it was. And I said, well, make a donation to my charity of choice. And so at the time I was running a small nonprofit out of Greenville that was mentoring to young kids. And he said, all right, $1,000 to the charity of your choice. If you say holy guacamole at some point during the game. And I was like, no way I'm going to fit that in. And sure enough, he kicks that field goal and Jeff's yelling and I start yelling. And I dropped it in there and nobody ever asked me about it. And it's not something I would ever say. And I'm never going to say it again. But that's funny you bring it up.
Yeah, that's why I remember it because, you know, you said it and I was like, holy guacamole.
Hey, Cameron, we talking? We talk about the ones that a lot of Pirate Nation remembers. What call specifically do you remember?
Well, probably the one dearest to me is the Tulsa game, Ruffin's first year, where we catch the Hail Mary. I love Ruffin so much, and he's just such a great guy. And for it to be his first game in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, I wanted him to win that game so bad. And so to be able to have that happen at the end of the game like that and win like that. He was so excited. Pirate fans were going nuts. That's probably my favorite, as on the air as a player, obviously the win over Miami at NC State after the flood is the one that sticks out the most in 1999. So yeah, those two for me are kind of my Pirate memories.
Speaking, that's a great segment before I promise will be the next week. Keys of the game. Speaking of which, I was just thinking about that when we started talking to you. I remember you talking about that being a special game and how you guys went through adversity. And I know is somewhat different because there are guys on that team. I know we talked last one of the first time we had you on about the fact guys losing everything they have and all the things you guys went through. How can you see a way that these guys that are on the team right now with COVID-19, I know that it's not the same circumstances, but is there a way that you could use COVID-19 as a bonding, like a team building way that these guys will get closer? And the fact that you got a coaching staff that they, I mean, from everything I've heard, they've, I mean, if you don't buy into Mike Houston, I don't know what we can do. I mean, because he's a winner everywhere he's going.
That's right. And I agree exactly with what you're saying, especially about bringing the team closer together. And I think it's certainly with COVID, honestly, the coaches don't want these guys around other people. They would rather them be just around the team the entire time. Just like the guy from UCF was saying, they've kind of created this, you know, bubble perspective. And so, yeah, these guys are seeing a lot of each other, probably more so than they'd like to. But, yeah, it does bring you together. And for that week that we spent in South Carolina waiting on the flood to subside, we got really close. And you know, we did everything together, ate all our meals together. And that helped us throughout that season. I mean, it was early in the season. I think that was like our fourth game or something like that. And then we went on to win four or five more after that before losing to Southern Miss and then again to UAB towards the end of the season. But it really brought us together. And I think it made things happen. You know, this game coming up on Saturday could be a blimp on the radar. I don't put it towards anything that's going to happen the rest of the season because this UCF team is so good. But certainly I expect this probably to be the closest knit team that some of these guys have been around since they've been in the program, guys like Mailers and others. This is probably a very tight team.
Yeah, you're talking about keeping everybody in a bubble and all the guys being around each other and trying to keep them away from everybody else. I had said the other day on the podcast, if I was Coach Houston, I would have their girlfriend swabbed just to make sure they don't get affected. Kevin, we promised we'd get to it. What are your keys to the game?
Yeah, so early in the season, I'm always kind of a, you know, three parts of the game kind of guy, offense, defense, special team. So, you know, watching that Georgia Tech game last week, there's very few weaknesses of UCF. But the one thing I did see was offensively for UCF, they did struggle to run the football at times. I thought the Georgia Tech front seven did a pretty good job stopping the run. I know they finished the game 247 yards of rushing or whatever it was. But at times, they were able to get off the field, especially on third down, hold them, put them in the third and long. So, defensively, the Pirates have to control the line of scrimmage up front and stop the run. Offensively, the flip side of that. They got to be able to run the football. We talked about Darius Penix, Hayden, Harris, some of those guys, whoever it is, whoever has the hot hand, if it's a committee of guys, we have to run the football because I feel like Holton can make things happen if he's got a threat of a run. If he's got no threat of a run, it's going to be a struggle. So run the football offensively, stop the run defensively, and then with special teams, Verity's got to, you know, he can't afford to miss. When we send him out there, he's got to make everything. The punt game's got to be solid. They got to cover well. Can't get anything blocked. So just do your job on special teams. And then offense and defense control the line of scrimmage. I think they have a shot.
No doubt. It's going to be probably a lot of fun. And what time do you guys take it? It'll be 11 o'clock on
Saturday? We're going there at 11. And so they're not really letting us in the stadium too much before that. So I imagine I'll come rolling in around 10 or so and head up there. But, yeah, I'm excited.
One more broadcasting question. I heard a voice say on Pirate Radio, I think it was last week, that you guys, I don't know if Bubba and Kyle haven't talked about this to you guys yet, doing audible on air, but the fact that you guys are not doing any traveling, every single game, it's going to be a home game for you guys. You're going to be broadcasting at Dowdy Picklin every game and, I guess, watching the television monitors. How does that make you feel knowing this time of year you guys are traveling so much?
Listen, that was a big one for me. You know, I know not everybody's taking COVID seriously, but my house, my family, my wife is on the front line. She's a pediatrician. She's at the hospital every day. She's around COVID every day. And so for us, I told them early on, I said, I'm not getting on a plane with the team. I'm not getting on a bus with the team. I said, if there's another way you can get me there safely, then I'll think about it. But I don't want to do it. And then, you know, Jeff, you know what Jeff's gone through over the years. So his immune system is not the best in the world. And so why subject ourselves to that? And so that was the best thing we could come up with was doing it. And other teams are doing that as well, doing the road games from home. You know, we don't want to put a crappy broadcast out there. So if we go through game one and it doesn't sound right or something doesn't work, then maybe we'll do an audible for the next road game. hopefully we get it figured out. But yeah, that's the plan for now, is to go into the studio and try to do it. I'll do the road game from there.
And how can people follow you on social media?
Oh gosh, I have Twitter and I have Instagram, but I don't use it that much. but I think Instagram, I think it's K Monroe 32. I think Twitter is K Monroe 21. Don't quote me on it. My dad probably uses Twitter more than I do. I got to get better. But yeah, so just search me, and if you hit me up, I'll respond.
Kevin, looking forward. Thank you, man, for the time tonight. I know you're getting ready for the broadcast. It means the world to have a legend like you on, and I look forward to it. And hopefully next time we have you on, we can talk about a upset at UCF.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you guys for having me. Enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, have a good night, man. Kevin Monroe, the longtime analyst and a great man. Love to have him be in that backfield again, guys. That would be tremendous, taking on the likes of UCF.
Yeah, and the secondary. Yeah, that'd be great to have Kevin back there pick some balls off for us.
All right, now we have Pierce allowed to attend. That's what Bubba Grant asked, if your dad and mom can be there.
Say again.
Bubba Grant's putting up there, the parents of broadcasters, are they allowed to attend?
Probably not, Dave.
I'm joking. I know. I know. It's not a serious question. 350. Hopefully, we can have next time a Navy. Have you guys heard anything as far as how they're doing it? I know that one of our talked
about that today. He said that McCabin. He said that there would be still 100 tickets given to the opposing team, and we'll still allow the 250 for our families. And then the rest of it would be divided up. And he said it would be based on priority points. And he also said there would be a small amount allotted to the students. He said they're going to be methodical and do their due diligence to make sure that the right people, you know, got the tickets. But it sounds
like you're not going to get them.
Well, you're probably right. If it's based on priority points, I won't get it. One thing I want to know is, are you going to limit it? If you're number five on priority points and you purchased eight season tickets, are you going to be allowed your eight season tickets, or just two, or just four? I would hope they would limit everybody to two tickets. That's what I would say. If you're, no matter what your rank is, I would hope they would allow it, limit everybody to two tickets. That way more people have a chance to go. But you know, that's not my decision.
Yeah, I thought that very thing. Bubba Grant says he's joking. James and Rita are Kevin's parents. I tailgate with them, is what he said. So
okay. All right. Well, now I get the joke. I was quite confused earlier.
Yeah, I was assuming just by the nature of his comment that it had to be Kevin Monroe's parents.
I thought maybe he was wondering if Gary was coming, Bubba.
Yeah, Gary's going to find a way to get in that game, I'm pretty sure. You hear, and if you wonder about Gary, you'll hear the jungle call, because there's nobody there. You definitely hear his jungle call. That'll give it away if he's in the stadium.
I bet he won't either. But, guys, how do you guys feel about the game Saturday? Bubba, what do you think we would have to do? What are Bubba's keys to the game?
Everything that's already been discussed. No need to rehash it, but I mean, just the obvious stuff from the standpoint of finding a way to force at least two or three turnovers, force UCF to kick a field goal or two in the red zone when they get down there. Called it's going to have to be a bend but don't break defense. I mean, you're not going to just shut UCF down. I mean, that goes without saying. So whether it's turnovers, forcing them to kick field goal. Like Kevin Monroe said, I mean, you cannot have any special teams breakdown where they have a short field as a result of a long punt return, a block punt, et cetera. So, I mean, you have to be sound in all phases, and hopefully by putting up a lot of points, we'll give ourselves an opportunity to be there in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's what I think the key is. We're going to have to – the offense is going to have to produce to its – you know, I think we all see the potentials there. The offense is going to have to live up to its potential. We're going to have to score points. I think we're going to have to make some plays on special teams and force some turnovers. Obviously, yeah, we can't have any turnovers, and we can't have any punts blocked. But I think to pull off this upset, I think a blocked punt, a kick return, something like that, a big special teams play or two would go a long way into helping pulling off the upset. It's going to be a tall task, and you know, I'm not sure we'll play a better team the rest of the year.
Well, that's one thing that I was going to say, that the one thing I remind myself about is UCF is going to be the best team we play all year. I hope fans, you said it before, Kyle, I hope fans won't get down on Coach Houston. I think that this is a team that, you know, until all of a sudden every conference now is going to be playing again, it looks like. UCF had a chance to sneak into maybe the playoffs, you know. Even Phil Steele, I mean, I have the guide right here. Phil Steele even had them potentially making the playoffs. So they're a very good football team. They have a dynasty, I mean, pretty much, even though they can't get in the playoffs for some reason. And so when you keep that in mind, how great a coach they have, everything is going well for them. They haven't had the bad coaching hire and the bad financial stuff and the bad chancellor and all the stuff we've had on and off the field. And so, you know, it would take, I think another thing, guys, I want to ask you, both of you, I'm a guy, I love Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron. Logan used to be into trick plays. Do you guys, I'm not saying a whole bunch of trick plays, but in the right moments, you feel like we should go into our trick plays a few times? I mean, I love those. I love trick plays. So maybe I'm biased towards that.
I guess now would be as good time as any. I mean, you've had all fall camp to practice it. So, I mean, if the opportunity presents itself and it's an advantageous situation, you don't want to just throw one away in a game you're getting your ass kicked in. But if it's a situation where it's going to be, you know, beneficial, then sure. I mean, I wouldn't just run one.
I'm just saying the right, you know, that's the thing is it's like life. It's the right moments. And there's with the Cowboys win over the Falcons, so that onside kick, I don't know if you guys saw that, was nuts. But anyway, if you get a chance, check that out. But that kicker, it was amazing. But that kind of stuff that you know is coming, even onside kicks or different things like that, or any kind of trick plays. And, you know, that he was talking about one person that I think that is a huge difference in the game, that Verity is going to have to be out of his mind. I mean, if it's a 53-yard kick, he's going to have to make that. If it's, you know.
If we're going to upset UCF, Jake Verity is going to have to be doing nothing but kicking extra points.
I'm saying, but still scoring points.
Yeah, like you're saying, Kyle, that's minus four.
Exactly. Yeah, there's some games where there's some games where a field goal is just fine. This will not be one of them. Guys, we closed it out every year last year, the year before, with on our preview shows, we're predicting the score. So you guys want to do that now? I'll go first. It's a 28-point spread as we sit tonight. I'm going to say we cover the spread. UCF 52, East Carolina 31.
All right, Bubba, what do you think?
I think Kyle's probably pretty accurate there. I will go. Let's go, UCF 55, East Carolina 37.
All right, I'm going to go upset for the Pirates, 42-39. Jake Verity wins a game-winning field goal. That's what I've got. 42-39. Right,
I will be never more happy in my life for you to be right and me to be wrong.
I know this is tough. I'm not saying that it's a cakewalk or that UCF is overrated. This is like climbing Mount Everest, but you still can climb Mount Everest. It's just very difficult to do.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, guys, do you have anything? By the way, Bubba, you've been on the air all day long, the marathon, man. Let's talk about the content we have in the past and the future coming up. We have a lot.
Yep. I started to reference earlier when we had had, I guess it was Jason Beatty on, and talking about the inside slant. Last week, we were joined by Jeff Allen from the Nightline Sports Network. This week on the inside slant, it will, of course, be on Friday night with the Pirates kicking off at 12 noon on Saturday. We're going to do it Friday at 8 on the inside slant, kicking things off this week. Chad Brindle, UC has a huge game this week. The Bearcats are hosting Army, a matchup of ranked teams there. I think what it's like number 14 against number 22, something like that, at Nippert Stadium. Second on the show. I'm sorry, I'm a bit distracted here as my dog waves a chip over my shoulder.
Hey, Reese.
8:15, Andrew Allegretta will rejoin us, Tulane's play-by-play voice, to preview Tulane and Southern Miss. 8:30, John Lazor, and the Virginia Tech play-by-play voice. He will join us to talk about the Hokies hosting the Wolfpack. I saw that one when it's about a touchdown spread, right, Kyle? And it was in the Hokies' favor, which surprised me. I would certainly take NC State in the points in that one for a couple of different reasons, if not more. But he will join us at 8:30. At 8:45, Jeff Allen, that I just mentioned a moment ago, he'll rejoin us to touch on the East Carolina UCF game. At 9 o'clock, Dustin Rensink of the Scott and Holman podcast, and you know we so often have Sam Raz on. Sam busy with his parents coming to town in Las Vegas. So we will talk to Dustin Rensink for the first time of the Scott and Holman podcast, even though Houston unfortunately had its fifth game impacted by COVID-19. They were scheduled to play North Texas, but that will not happen. But we'll talk about everything that has happened and how he and all the Houston fans are ready to scream. And then wrapping things up at 9:15, we'll be joined by Andrew Spivey. He's of Gator country, as Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators travel to Oxford to take on Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels in the season opener on Saturday.
Has there ever been a better fit than Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss? I mean, that just seems to go together so perfect.
Yes, it does. By the way, guys, one of my fans, too, will have stuff obviously around the game, including post game as well. And hopefully we can not have tears in our beer. Hopefully we can be talking about a Pirate victory, an upset. And I know Bubba will be doing that after the game, that on Saturday night, right?
Yeah, we'll have the Pirate football playback. And that will be on Saturday evening. Tentatively right now, that's scheduled for 8 p.m. And so we'll have that in addition to the college football playback, and we'll review the week on the whole, and that will be Sunday morning around 9 a.m.
That's going to be fantastic. So a lot of programming in the past, recent past, as of today, a lot yesterday, today, and the next few days. Busy time of year for us, guys. Kyle, thank you so much, man, for all that you do. Bubba, the same. Appreciate it very much. Looking forward to finally – that we get to talk some Pirate football on the field. We've talked a lot of off the field the last handful of months with COVID-19 and the like, but it's going to be good to finally be able to talk some stats. And Bubba's the man on that with a breakdown of the game. Look forward to that on Saturday. Look forward to it very, very much. All right, guys, for the Pirate preview, thank you to Jason Beatty from Night 24/7, and obviously Kevin Monroe, the analyst, the analyst of the Pirates for many, many years, like you said. All right, until next time, guys, enjoyed it. This is the unofficial podcast of the Pirates, a Pirate preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.